Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Can we have a roll call, please, Debbie?
Debbie Barry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
Bruce Sprinker.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This afternoon is weird. It just feels so different. Can we have a motion to approve the minutes from our September meeting?
So moved. Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Perfect. I'm not going to vote since I wasn't here. Karen, if you want to do the financial report.
I would love to. Thank you. Before today, we're going to look at August financials because of the timing of the meeting earlier this month. August wasn't quite closed for that meeting, so we're looking at them at this point in time. As usual, all of the documents are in your board packets, all the detail. We're just going to summarize it here today. So if we start to look at our summary, our first line is always property tax. We are ahead of where we thought we would be at this point of the year. We are absolutely on track. Historically, though, we are within 0.1% of where we were last year at that time. Our big negative, as it has been on the revenue sides, are the grants and local governments. These aren't just timing issues, as I have explained in the past, of when projects are commenced, when work is done, when we put in full reimbursements for those grants. Our investment income, as always, the detail is in your packet. Over where we thought we would be for this point of the year, we are always balancing the safety, liquidity is our utmost tenets of our investment policy. So that being said, we balance our investments among several different vehicles throughout the year. If we move on to golf is under where we thought they would be for this point in the year. We absolutely saw this coming with as hot as August was. It was just too hot for people to be out there and really enjoy golfing. What is the positive news here, though, is catering revenues have taken a significant increase over last year. So because we have gone out, we're looking at other sources of revenue, trying to be creative in our revenue generation, that has helped mitigate this downturn. Moving on to the zoo. Zoo is over where we thought we would be for this time of the year. And again, this is a case of being creative in revenues. Even though admissions are under where we thought they would be, revenue-wise for this point of the year, their catering sales are up significantly over prior years, and that's what's helped drive this back into a positive.
Karen, is that Stillwater or is that everything?
Everything, but Stillwater especially.
Great.
4D Theater is also in those revenue items, something we didn't have last year that's in there also. So it's a lot of other revenue sources that are helping to compensate for them. We go down to the chalet and the restaurants and concessions. Obviously, this is under where we thought we would be for this time of the year. That goes back to the chalet earlier in the year. But even looking at this with that negative there, there's some very positives in that information. The East 55th restaurant is at 135% of their annual budget, so they've already blown through their budget for the year, so that was a beautiful thing. And that was as of the end of August, remember.
And what are the other constituents of that, of the $700,000?
The chalet and all of the...
How much was the chalet?
I don't have the detail, but I was sending that to you right after the meeting.
Okay.
After
that was the biggest chunk?
Yes.
By far the biggest chunk?
Yes.
We'd have snow for a better part of the winter.
Yeah, there were so many days that they could not open because of rain, because the temperature, because of other things, where they just weren't able to be open on days they normally would have been for that first quarter when they were rolling.
And what other, is the Whiskey Island restaurant concession in that number too, or is that down below?
Those are the restaurants and concessions, yes.
So the restaurant's in it, but the marina is down below.
Correct.
Okay, I see.
Right.
Okay. And that would be, so what restaurants do we have? We have 55th Street, we have Marlin's Wharf, we have the Wendy Park one, and then we have one in Berea, small thing in Berea.
We have the small concession ones at Wallace Lake, yes, for ice cream, one in Hinckley, yes.
Okay, and then
Emerald Douglas.
What's that?
The Emerald Douglas in Rocky River.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And are the golf concessions coming too?
Golf is, no, golf is up strictly in their line item, yes.
The restaurants and golf, the golf restaurants.
Moving down, skipped over some of the other ones, moving down to the marina and other as we were talking about there. Permitting and reservation revenue is up over 2015, just not quite where we thought we would be for this point of the year.
And what's the other in marina?
Anything else revenue-wise that doesn't fall into one of those other categories.
Okay, gotcha. So, but so really it's primarily the three marinas, right? 55th
mm-hmm.
Street,
yes.
Edgewater, okay. And do we get any fees from the yacht clubs that inhabit, or does that still go to the state?
No, those come to us.
Okay, so yes. that would include that as well,
mm-hmm.
the yacht club.
Yes.
Okay, I understand.
So total receipts is a negative because mostly of that grants number. Definitely keeping an eye on that and watching it as we go forward. If we keep moving down and start to look at our expenditures, salaries and fringes, we have a major positive. And most of that is due to position management savings where we're truly watching our open positions. And then also due to some very significant savings in our seasonal area also. Utilities, again, still a positive as it has been running, and that's mostly in the natural gas and water and sewer areas. If we continue to move down and look at our capital operations, definite positives in the material contracts, all of those areas. And even though equipment and land at this point looks like it's a negative, that's a negative for where we thought they would be at this point in the year. They're still absolutely positively within their annual budget. And obviously, we will continue to keep an eye on those to make sure they stay there. The self-funded reserve, our insurance claims, we're having some significant claims come through this year. If you remember last meeting, we had a budget adjustment to increase the budget in this area. It's something we are continuing to watch. It's still over where we thought we would be for this point of the year. It's currently under budget, but we have a feeling we will definitely be needing to come back to the board again before the end of the year to address that. And that's one of the reasons why we have that a reserve set aside to help cover some of these as they fluctuate over the years.
And a projection into the next year or two?
For the self-funded?
Yeah.
It's going to depend a lot on what we end up this year with. We may need to pull some monies from our general revenues to cover what we're going to need for the insurance claims this year. It's kind of been an anomaly. And we need to make sure we leave enough in that reserve to cover our runout claims going into next year. So when we look at it.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. We have some existing claims that are taken care of.
We do. So we currently have about $1 million in there. And at the end of the year, we need to make sure that whatever the balance is in there, we have enough to cover those claims that won't hit until next year. At this point, we're still in the final stages of trying to estimate those numbers.
Yeah, but I guess the question is, do we see a sunset to those claims, or we don't know?
Is it an anomaly?
We've been blessed with some really exceptional years.
And we've That's
been,
not the answer.
I know, I'm getting it. With some really exceptional years, so we've been able to build that balance in our reserve a little bit. This year is a bad year for us, but we're more hitting a norm level.
Well, then, okay, now you answer.
So yeah, we're more moving to where the state is from a
right.
air traffic standpoint. We have been aware of this. Matt and Harold and the entire team have been monitoring all the way through. But again, when we're self-funded, you take the good and the bad. I think we're going to be more in the normal range moving forward. We have been blessed with a number of very good health care years.
But they were unusual.
They were unusual to the standard. And we're looking at through the benefit study team of where we can look at costs, how do we balance. I know the counties, they're faced with a shortfall. I think we're looking at some different plans and plan setups. So we'll keep you informed as we're able to move forward and trying to get collective information back on some of the credits and some of the other things that are available through some of these healthcare providers to find out where we'll land.
Any sense of proactive wellness, things of that nature beyond where we are?
We are looking at a few other programs, pilot programs as we're moving forward. I don't think any of them will significantly impact the claims that we're currently being faced with. I think they'll be overarching, which is very positive for the insured, but we're also looking at the plan and plan setups to try to tailor make those for employees, with Metro Health being more regional now than more downtown centric. They're providing some different pushes for insurance opportunities and coverage for not only Cleveland Metro Parks, but for the county and others. So we're going to continue to look at how to manage those care costs.
Thanks.
Total expenditures, therefore, are showing a very positive number due to those capital items. Continually, we will obviously monitor all of these and keep an eye on all of them to make sure they're within budget.
Any questions? Thanks, Karen. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on to our new business.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It is afternoon. Very different than good morning. First time we've got to say that. So general action items with us this morning. We do have one of our retiring guests. I would like to first recognize Curtis Gittlesberger for his years of service, more than 30 years as an animal keeper. He has worked in a wide variety of areas, including the rainforest, wilderness trek. He has done many behind the scenes tours, media activities, and he's really most recently helped with the preparation of the open of the new Tiger Passage. And so he has been a valued asset for Cleveland Metro Parks, and we're very much appreciative of his 30 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks. With us this afternoon, we have one of our employee guests, Kathy Munro. She's our retiring guest with over 28 years of experience. Kathy?
So, I will say good morning. Good afternoon. I'd like to introduce Kathy Munro. I've had the pleasure of getting to know Kathy a little bit more over the past couple years in my new role. And there's two things I want to mention about Kathy before I let her talk. First thing that we love about Kathy is her attention to detail. Kathy has managed the center section of the zoo for quite a while now. And that used to be a quiet, sleepy area of the zoo. And that changed pretty drastically, starting with the carousel in 2014 and then with Stillwater. So it's been a hopping place as of recent. And Kathy's attention to detail has been tremendous because the guest feedback from that area has been through the roof. The other thing that I really appreciate, Kathy, is I've had the opportunity to work with her as a union steward. And one thing that I think that everyone would describe Kathy as is fair. She's been very fair, bringing things forward, things that maybe necessarily aren't in what Kathy would want or representing everyone in the park fairly and equally. So I really appreciate everything she's done for us. We're going to miss her, but she's going to be able to use this extra time to spend time with her grandkids, spend time with her parents, and then pursuing this adventurous side, which I just recently found out. I guess her most recent birthday, she spent skydiving. So that will not no longer be part of our health plan. So.
That's a very timely.
So did that. I just want to say thanks to Kathy for this.
It's been my pleasure working here with Metro Parks. I'm not really ready to retire yet, but I'm trying to help take care of sick parents. It's been a great job. Put three kids through college and grad school. I love the people I work with. Some of them were kids when I started here. But it's been a great job, and I'm truly going to miss it. I'm looking forward to visiting after I retire. Be bringing my grandkids down a lot, I'm sure. But thank you very much.
Come on, Miss Kathy. What I love most about it is being able to read these, and when you look at it, as Chris had said, the personnel committee, but also supporting the Park Pathway Internship, which is really mentoring kids. That means an awful lot to Metro Parks, working with the Washington Park Environmental Studies School. So on behalf of Judge Anthony J. Russo, the Board of Park Commissioner, we're recognizing you for your more than 28 years of service to Cleveland Metro Parks. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you.
Also, I would just like to recognize within the past 2 weeks, one of our team members from the zoo, Patty Prom, passed away. She had been with the zoo for more than 11 years, and we will be remembering her for the years to come. So the recommended action, recognizing Curtis A. Ginsberger and Kathy A. Monreal for their years of service, is on the bottom portion of page 4.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is a contract amendment, RFP 6032B. This is the replacement Edgewater Beach House. Sean has a couple of quick slides to work through, basically bringing this replacement package forward for the board. Sean?
Thanks, Brian. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm very pleased to be before you this afternoon. We're representing many, many months of work and about 18 months of work with Higley to bring forward a package within our budget for the replacement beach house project. So at the last meeting, we brought before you GMP1. GMP1 had with it the site improvements and some early building package items like foundation and steel. GMP2 here today then is the balance of the project, all those items related to the building itself. Very quickly here, we are forwarding those major tenets of our master plan for the lakefront, with here the concentrations being on the beach house and then improvements to the parking lot. So as you can see here, GMP1 included the parking lot improvements, so we can have a drop-off aisle and then proper circulation throughout the parking lot. The elevated community connector, so that we can connect the second deck of the beach house to the West 76th Street Tunnel. The trails and infrastructure, bike parking, and foot wash stations here along the beach. So that was all GMP1. And then GMP2 here is the cost related with the building and the replacement beach house. We are working, actually we've now finalized our floor plans so that the first floor consists of restrooms, both men's and women's and family restrooms, a large concession area, and the second floor is an open air elevated deck with a fireplace. We're working on some plans for a beach slash tiki bar at the rear. So here it is, the most current rendering of the facility. So you can see here on the first floor, we've got our concession windows, both order and pickup. We have on the second deck here that open air pavilion structure where we'll have seating. The fireplace is visible here from this north elevation, and then that tiki slash beach bar will be in the back corner. The elevated community connector to the West 76th Street Tunnel is right here, and we have three ways to access this second deck, both from stairs here, from the tunnel in the back, and then a ramp that wraps along the back. This is a very robust structure. It's concrete, masonry, steel, and then it'll be highlighted with this beautiful Western Red Cedar cap. So we worked very hard on the project with Bielowski and Higley to get to this point, asking for your approval on GMP2 today.
Sean, when people come and want to change into bathing suits, mm-hmm. the same place as before then, or this won't have changing areas?
This will have changing areas. We did a survey of those who were coming to the beach and found that of those who come, about 40 to 50% do want the opportunity to have changing areas. So what we found here is that in the restrooms themselves,
they're not big enough.
We will have some changing areas in the restrooms. What we did though was we pulled the showers outside. So we found that it was preferred to have foot wash and showers on the exterior. So we'll have a shower location here, another shower location here. So you're rinsing yourself off at the edge of the beach
right
before you get inside. It's just a much better sequence of events for the beachgoers.
Very good, thanks.
Very good point. The amendment to the contract falls on the top page of page 6 to the GMP RFP 6032B contract amendment with Higley.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next one is the amendment for RFP 6118B, Euclid Beach, Villa Angela Beach, Shoreline Improvement. This is for the guaranteed maximum price. Sean, anything you'd like to add to this? This is a continuation for the Euclid Beach here.
Yes, thank you, Brian. Commissioners, we've been working with Neroni, and we have a GMP with Neroni for the demolition of the pier and the retaining walls, which are failing, that flank the pier. This cost is for just the demolition itself. We are working on a design of a replacement pier. We held a public meeting last week that was very well attended, so we continue to receive feedback from the public on the design of the new pier. We will be bringing that forward to you probably in the winter or spring time frame for the costs related to that new replacement pier. We have to go through final engineering and permitting through ODNR, Ohio EPA, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers before we can
secure those permits to build that pier.
Does this include hauling away the debris?
So one thing we are doing very, very strategically here is we are actually going to be stockpiling a good amount of the debris, because the most economical way to build a new pier may be able to have the first portion of it on land. So why throw away materials that we could then use as backfill? Sure. So we will be stockpiling the majority of the materials here that are demolished.
That's excellent.
That's something people will see, they'll know about.
Yes, we have not only held a public meeting, in talking with Councilman Palencic also and Northeast Shores, we've got a notification going to their local newspaper here actually today, so they're aware of what's going on in the park.
Now, Edgewater, we're targeting to have done by next May?
Yeah, the end of next May or very early June.
Beginning of summer.
Yes, hopefully we have a decent winter.
But for Euclid Beach, what, another year beyond that because of the other reviews?
It really does depend on permitting. Our goal would be to have shovels in the ground next spring, and then depending on construction timeframes, if it's 4 or 6 months, to then build. But it all really depends on those permitting
times. So it's conceivable that stuff could be kind of torn up through the winter next year. Conceivable.
There's a small potential for it, yes. We were able to get through when we did the Villa Angela beach improvements. We were able to work with ODNR, Ohio EPA, and U.S. Army Corps, and get through in a very timely fashion. We got through in about 4.5 months, which is very fast on all of the timeframes. So we're hoping if we can get through here in that 5 or 6 month time frame that we're coming out of the ground at the end of next spring. But it really all depends.
So and that'll be the short pier, right? They're just going out a little way.
Well, I don't know if I would call it a short pier. It's going to be longer than the pier that's there today that doesn't make it out over water.
Right, yeah.
But it's the first curve.
Yeah. Correct. It's the first of what could be several phases.
Yeah, and how far out was that from the shore again?
Pier length is about 220 feet or so, and over water we're about 80 feet or something.
80, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, it's interesting having the sequence with the underwater sills that we had to do, and the permits open and close.
Yeah.
The work we had to very strategically sequence all of these projects to be able to keep them all moving. And certainly our goal is to get this demolished, get the design done. We are communicating, as Sean said, with the Commonwealth Observer, and we are looking back to the Edgewater. We are looking for that by Memorial Day of next year. A lot of it is weather dependent, but that is our ultimate goal: is to
Edgewater Memorial Day. This by Labor Day?
I hope if the permits come in, yes.
Yeah, if all goes well.
Correct. Demo will start right away then.
The demo will start first week of October.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Are there no further questions? The recommended action falls in the middle part of page 7 to enter into the component 2 with Norrie and Sons for the GMP.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next one is just a change order. It's bid number 6216, Parkway Paving. We are working to add to. We are painting about 17 structures throughout the park district. We're adding the 18th. This is a change order for Timberland Farm. It's a piece of property that we acquired. We were able to seal and take care of the roof and the other components of it, and now we're working on painting the exterior. So the change order is in the amount of $39,845, bottom portion of page 8. For change order number 1 with Southwest Companies.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next recommended action item we have is to submit a grant application for and through the Lean Six Sigma program for the local government efficiency program. This time we are looking at our park reservation and special event process, and we're looking at how to more efficiently go through that. We're actually looking at models from Chicago and Milwaukee to take a look at how we go from the start to the finish of our actual permitting process, and how we basically try to make it a one-stop shop. This, I believe, will be the sixth that we've done now. One was done kind of outside of the program, now 5 with this program, and so we're continuing to find government dollars to help lean out some of our processes. Karen and I were talking about one that we took out 39 plus steps and got it down to 6. And so over time, processes evolve for certain reasons, and now we're taking an in-depth look at every one of our processes and trying to find ways to be either A, more efficient, or B, more paperless. And this is just another example of taking a look at our special event projects. recommended action is in the portion of page 9.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Recommended action F is consumption of various meats. Zoo animals. This is just an overage that had been seen by the board. It would be the additional consumption amount of $3,997. It's on the bottom or top portion of page 10.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
We have a couple of tabulation of award and bids. We're moving forward with the strawberry pond dredging in the North Chagrin, as the commission has seen in the previous. This is a co-op bid, IPA 6219, for office furnishings and workstations above and beyond what we currently have to be able to be moved into the new office administration addition. We will be adding to it. Bid number 622 is for the hay barn, which is paid for by the Zoological Society. That we had been looking at before, but then took a step back. And then sole source 6227 is the used vehicle purchase program, where we're working on continuing that program that we started a couple of years ago. And Joe has a couple of quick numbers, or I don't know if you might take it.
Sure. So the used vehicle purchase auction has been a great tool for us over the past 2 years. Our average age of our fleet was around 13.9 years, and using that, we've been able to knock it down to about 12.6 years, purchasing some extra vehicles per year to help us with our turnover and get that number down. So with the vehicles we've purchased, we've saved about $200,000 if we would have had to purchase all new. So it's been a great tool, purchasing a lot of vehicles from the south, so really avoiding those salt-driven vehicles. Large companies like Duke Energy down south out of Cincinnati is where they're based. We're able to get some really high-quality vehicles, and we've sent the team down the last 2 years with the board's approval, and we'd like to continue to have that authority to help get that number down to hopefully a 10-year-old average fleet, which is pretty much industry standard.
That's terrific that you're doing this. I mean, that shows real creativity in pulling the cost out. Good for you.
I applaud the staff because they go down, a couple of mechanics and our staff go down and they go through the vehicle and the front end of the auction, and we try to find vehicles that are complementary to the things that we're doing. We've been successful. Again, I think to get to that 10-year-old age would be important. We've got some, in fact, we were talking about a Ranger Cruiser this morning that is over 200,000. We haven't found a police vehicle yet to purchase, but other trucks and other things, we're putting the resources in through this auction, and this gives us the latitude for a period of a year to find these certain types of auctions to buy these pieces of equipment.
That's great. Can I ask one question about the strawberry pond dredging? How do you do that? Do you, without contaminating
sure.
lower. I mean, how does that? Do you use a backhoe and you pull away at the sides and do it that way?
It's a multi-step process. We actually drain the pond first. Jim's crews have the pond drawn down right now, so that we can work from the sides.
Do you pump it out?
We've actually cored holes in the basin to let it drain naturally itself.
Okay.
You might need to pump out a small area.
Okay, I understand. Okay, then the water that flows into the pond while you're doing the dredging just flows right through.
Correct. It flows through. There's a small channel in the middle. And mind you, the pond is very, very silted. So it's really not much of a defined channel, but the water will flow through.
And how many cubic yards are you going to be pulling out?
That's a very good.
It's a big. It's
seven plus. I mean, we don't know the exact amounts yet until we actually will get into it. But based on the 2 acres, should be going to come out.
Correct. Are you paying by the yard or by the yard?
So you're paying the lump sum for the base bid amount, which is the majority of the dredging on the south side of the pond, and then in the bid itself, we asked for a cubic yard price, which we received at $25 a cubic yard. We were actually going to excavate an additional 735 cubic yards to create a forebay. So what that does for us then, by creating a forebay, so that's a small depressed area with the initial pipe outlet. So we're not back here in 10 years dredging the whole pond. We can be back here in 10 years just dredging the forebay.
Just that, yeah.
Correct.
Very good. Thank you.
Excellent work. So the recommended actions are on page 11 for those bids.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Well, vouchers and payroll.
Thank you. Submitted for your approval, resolution 1609-150. The following vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code.
Move the motion.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
Very good. Information briefing and policy items. With us this morning, we have one of our employee guests. With us this morning, we have Bonnie Schneider. Bonnie, if you'd please like to stand. She has come to us from the Medina County District Library, where she served the Brunswick, Medina, and Highland branches. She has done an amazing job. She grew up in the park. She resides near Hinckley. She's attended both Community College in Cuyahoga and Lakeland, where she studied accounting. She has probably one of the most challenging jobs of any of our park employees. She has no idea the calls that she's going to get on any given day, and our staff worked very hard to help her through the questions that may come forward. So we would definitely like to, again, welcome her. She's been with us since January of 2016. Bonnie?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be able to work in the park system. Every time someone says, where did you go from my old job, sir, where did you go? I say, Cleveland Metro Parks, and they're like, you're the luckiest person. And I am. Everyone is so helpful. They're all approachable and made me feel welcome from day one. So thank you all.
Did you know that your predecessor was eaten by a bear?
Emergency Management Program Certification. I think we're going to get Dan to give us a quick overview, but the team members of Ken Chapitzer and Greg Headley, along with a host of others, have really put the Metro Parks Ranger Department in really in a very good place. So, Chief?
Thank you. Actually, we positioned the agenda that way just for me to step forward and fix the record about the bear comment, so that didn't happen. Good for saying. Gotcha. So I want to introduce our two. Our two managers. Come forward, please. Lieutenant Ken Chapitzer, our Western Division Lieutenant and Accreditation Coordinator, and our Director of Risk Management and Safety, Greg Headley. We're going to do a two-tier introduction and let them introduce our guests today from the County Office of Emergency Management, because as I mentioned last week at ENM, for many of our employees and the management team, that if it weren't for these two, their hard work in pulling together all the proofs of compliance and doing the work for another tier of accreditation or certification, it probably wouldn't have gotten done to the high level that it did get finished. So if you could introduce our guests, please, guys, and thank you for your work again.
Sure, absolutely. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'd like to introduce Mark Christie and Macklin Finn from the Cuyahoga County Office of Emergency Management.
So, hello, everybody. My name is Mark Christie. I'm the acting manager of the Cuyahoga County Office of Emergency Management. We're really happy to be here today to present this plaque to the Cleveland Metro Parks. Just a little bit about our office and the program, and then I'll turn it over to Matt, who worked directly from our office with Metro Parks. I have to talk a little bit about his experience in the project. But the Office of Emergency Management, in its simplest form, if you're unfamiliar with what we do, we're like the local FEMA. Highway Revised Code requires every county to have an emergency management agency. And so, we are that. And basically what we're doing in times of peace is trying to conduct public information activities and also work with our public safety partners to plan together and ensure our plans are in alignment and ensure that when something really bad does happen in the county, we're all going to be able to work together and have shared expectations about how we're going to do that. And so one of the ways over the years that we've sort of implemented a way to do that is we developed a certification program that was originally designed primarily for municipalities to go through. So the local political jurisdictions, the communities, would go through this program, and it's a standards-based program that basically outlines what we think constitutes an effective emergency management program. Over the past year or so, we've sort of expanded the program to account for other organizations that have emergency management capabilities, like Metro Parks or higher learning institutions or even hospitals. Recently, we our first non-municipal organization was Cleveland State University, and now we have Cleveland Metro Parks, which is it's even more interesting to us because when we developed this program, we never really fully thought that it could be as meaningful and relevant to organizations like Metro Parks, but we really enjoyed working with Cleveland Metro Parks. It's a really proud moment for Cleveland Metro Parks, and we're happy to be here today to definitely recognize that. I also, before I turn over to Mac to let him speak about his experience with Metro Parks, I also want to just recognize that in late July, you may have been aware that the RNC was in town. And during that time period, our office was very busy. We were fully activated in our emergency operations center for a period of, I think, 4 or 5 days. So we're working 24-hour shifts with all our public safety partners in that space, helping to, on a day-to-day basis, ensure there's a common operating picture among communities and public safety partners, and situational awareness was shared. But I just want to recognize the Cleveland Metro Parks. We needed additional support in the law enforcement realm, and the Cleveland Metro Parks Rangers through Chief Velosky was able to fill that need. So Chief Velosky and his staff should really be commended that he was able to support Cuyahoga County during the largest national security special event that the area's ever hosted. So we really appreciate that, Chief. And without your support, it would be much more difficult. So thank you for that as well. Daphne?
Yeah, again, congratulations to the Metro Parks. I can't say enough about working with the team, with Greg and Lieutenant Shaver and Chief Velosky. These guys have been super easy to work with. It's a long time coming for them, really. They've been working day in, day out, behind the scenes on this initiative, along with their day-to-day operations. They've got a lot going on. So to be able to get this done as quickly as they did and efficiently as they did and meet all of the standards, they had to meet 12 core standards for emergency preparedness. As Mark said, it was pulled from a national program that we kind of scaled down a bit for to a more municipal level to allow for our communities and organizations such as the Metro Parks to complete it on their own. So they had to meet 12 core standards in addition to a minimum, I think it was 6 additional elective standards, which they went above and beyond that and completed additional standards. They had to create an emergency operations plan. The chief and other individuals had to go through ICS training, a lot of common group operations training. So there's a lot that goes into a program like this. And it's no small feat. So again, congratulations, you guys. It's an excellent job done, and couldn't have made it easier to work with them. So
I just want to read the plaque and present it to you. It reads, Cuyahoga County recognizes the hard work and commitment that Cleveland Metro Parks has made to emergency preparedness and the safety and well-being of its visitors and employees. It is a great honor that the organization is declared ready certified and signed by Cuyahoga County Executive Armin Budish and Walter Topp, Emergency Management Administrator. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We had screamers and noisemakers. but we ran out.
Flashbacks. The next, again, congratulations to the Ranger team and Greg, a very, very big accomplishment. The next one we'd like to highlight is the Cleveland Metro Parks is a recipient of the North Coast 99, a legacy award. Why this is so significant, this is the 10th time the agency has been recognized by the ERC, and with us this morning, we have Pat Perry, who's going to give us a small presentation of what this award actually means for the North Coast 99 that we've won for the past 6 years in a row.
Thanks.
I'll leave it right here.
Okay, sounds good. Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, commissioners. Just briefly, for those of you who don't know, first of all, ERC has been based in Northeast Ohio for 96 years. I've been there 18 years, and North Coast 99 has been around for 18 years. Our organization, ERC, provides HR services and training and so forth. We're based in Northeast Ohio. We provide that not only in Northeast Ohio, but nationally. Well, one of our big initiatives we started a long time ago, actually back in 1999, was North Coast 99. It is not a moneymaker, it's not a fundraiser. We just felt it was very important to provide this initiative in Northeast Ohio because we are very bullish on the idea of identifying organizations that are doing a better than average job of how to find and keep really good people. We do believe, and again, we're a little bit biased, we do believe that the backbone of economic development in any region is the amount of talent you have. And not just average talent, but top talent. If you have top talent in your region, a lot of great things happen. I would say that certainly the last several years in Northeast Ohio certainly are reflective of that. 2016 seems like we're on a roll. But even with our Cavaliers, right? Talent, great coaching, great leadership, look what happens. Just a couple of stories today, and kudos to commissioners and leadership here, but also the HR folks at the Metro Parks, just hearing a couple of stories. you know, if you ask somebody about Northeast Ohio, they say a number of great things, right? But usually number one or two on that list are the parks, the parks system. And I'm native Northeast Ohio, an active user of the Metro Parks, very proud of what you guys do. And what you've described so far, and who's come up and talked, and the accolades, it doesn't happen by accident. It happens because you help employ a lot and keep a lot of really great people. And that needs to be recognized, because we need more organizations like the Cleveland Metro Parks in Northeast Ohio. We need to clone North Coast 99 winners, because more organizations, as they start paying more attention to their employees, the bottom line will always take care of itself and bring you great talent. We just felt it's really important to recognize these organizations. What's really cool about the Cleveland Metro Parks is that you folks have won this award for 10 years. It's been around for 10 years, and Brian came up, and last Thursday night we had a big gala and was recognized as one of six organizations winning our Legacy Award, which is a 10-year award. I will tell you, winning this program 1 year is an achievement. Anyone who's been involved, it's the actual application process starts in February every year. It's several months. It is not easy. It is all objective. It's not subjective at all. It's the top 99 workplaces between here, Sandusky, Erie, and Mansfield. 22 counties we call Northeast Ohio. So I can share with you, because I know a lot of the CEOs in town, that they pay a lot of attention to this list. And they want to be on this list. If you saw the folks that didn't get on the 99, it's like a who's who. And so they try very hard to get into that 99, because what it does, it, just as we mentioned, people say, oh my gosh, you're going to the Metro Parks, right? Well, you are an employer of choice. You should be very, very proud of this achievement. This is important. You know, it's, and an organization like ours who takes a look at this, takes an objective view to all of the employees at the Metro Parks. It's an affirmation that your leadership team is incredibly well-intended, trying to do the right things to attract and retain great people. And it also should be a confidence builder that you're surrounded by other excellence in the organization. And that's a big deal, and that's extremely important. I know selfishly, it's Monday, it's raining, right? What gets you up in the morning to go to work? If you hate your job, it's a long week. I never wanted to live for the weekend, or I don't believe in hump day, and I don't thank God it's Friday. I like coming to work because I like going to work where I enjoy the work and I love the people. I get the sense, I always have, from Harold to Brian, you name it, that the people who come to the Metro Parks love what they're doing and have a passion. That's really important. So I also, on a personal note, and then I have an award to present to Brian, is on a personal note, as a native Northeast Ohio person, also somebody involved in business for 37 years here in the community, I really do, from the bottom of our heart, from our board, our staff, thank you for the incredibly positive impact that you make in this community. I think sometimes you can forget how much of an impact you make, what you do, and it's the way you take care of us, and it's the way you treat us in that experience when we come onto your property. So I thank you very much. So at this time, I would like to present our annual award. It's an original piece of art. You have 9 others like this. This is your 10th. Each one is unique. This was created actually by a local graphic design artist. It is reflective. It's our running man this year who kind of all these pieces and parts coming together, right? Moving ahead very strong, leaving an impact, finding things better, right? Leading things better than how you found it. That's what we really believe in. And our theme this year was really leaving a legacy. You got the Legacy Award this year. So on behalf of everybody at ERC, our sponsors, our board, our staff, congratulations, Brian, to you, your team, commissioners, on a tremendous achievement. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to recognize Christina Siebold, and if she can please stand. She doesn't want to stand, but she has done an amazing job bringing all of this information forward. As Pat said, it is a lot of information. It takes a tremendous amount of time, but we know that we are judged by our attraction, retention, and motivating our performance. And I think it's shown in the work product that we put out. So, Christina, thank you very much. The whole HR team, very much appreciated. I just had to add that. The next information item we have is the guest focus communication update. Kelly and Jacqueline will be tag teaming.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I just want to take a brief moment to introduce you to Jacqueline Gurley. She's been with us for about a month now. She came to us most recently from an ad agency here in the market, Aris Keithley, new director of public relations and social media. Prior to that, she was in Missouri. She started as a TV journalist and also spent some time working for the governor of Missouri. So we're really lucky to have her on board. So we wanted to share with you a little bit.
Sean broke it before he.
Sorry for the technical difficulties.
Can you just roll it forward?
There we go. So, as you know, every day you live this in your daily life, you're bombarded with messaging and advertisements, and you now with technology have the option to turn things off or hear and focus on what you want to hear. So what's really important to us and to our organization is that we are delivering the right content at the right time through the right channels. And so therefore, we've been working over the past several months and really preparation for 2017 and taking some very specific actions. First and foremost, and we're going to talk through each of these briefly, is prioritizing our digital channels. So this is inclusive of social media, the new website that's coming online, a whole new email platform that we're going to introduce. We also want to launch an online preference center. So this is where it's a new feature on our website where folks are going to be able to tell us more about them. What are their interests? When do they want to hear from us, and what do they want to hear? And then finally, refining and enhancing some of the print media that we've been doing. And really the driver behind this, the chart on the left-hand side of the page here, really talks about daily media consumption and how dramatically that landscape has changed since 2010. So you see this increase of internet of over 100%. And towards the bottom, you see print really declining. So that's making us really have to reevaluate how we're talking to consumers. And so one of those is really focusing on social media, and I'll let you.
Bruce, are you, it says 57 million Americans now use Snapchat.
Yeah.
Did you use Snapchat?
Go on. Excuse me.
Snapchat is meeting. And as you see, perhaps the most stunning thing, if any of you are familiar with hearing about Snapchat over the recent years, it's been something that has caught on very early with the younger generation, but now 50% of users are over age 25. So more and more people are turning to social media in general, and really that live in the moment on the social media, those channels. Snapchat, Instagram stories now is growing in popularity to not only share what's going on in their personal lives and share their moments, for example, at any of our reservations and golf courses and zoo, but that's where they're really turning to consume the information that they want to consume. And you'll see, based on those numbers on the chart on the right-hand side, just what a robust user base we have following us on those channels and how engaged they are with the content that we are delivering across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and then Snapchat, of course, is growing as well. And we'll be focusing, with me coming on board, on how do we promote that and grow that even further. I think a lot of it is just making folks aware of all of these different outlets that they have to get information and photos and engage with us, on the go and on their fingertips. So, and that's a lot of it is, like we discussed from the first slide, getting them the information where they want it, when they need it. So that's a big driver for us right now. In fact, 80% of content is consumed on mobile these days. So that is pretty telling. And as Kelly mentioned before, one of the large actions that we are taking moving forward is the launch of our new website. Right now we have a website that is not mobile responsive. It is not delivering the best user experience. It's not getting our user the content they want in the best way. So we are taking steps with launching a new website, planned to launch January 2017, which will coincide really nicely with the centennial, to get them a more user-friendly experience, get them more robust content, an easy-to-use calendar of events and programs, which you'll see coming up why that's such an important piece of this. And as we look at launching this new platform, we're also building in that preference integration. So our users know us, they know how they like to engage with us, and they want, as you've seen by some of the statistics, they want the content, and they want the information, and they want the photos and stories that we have to share. They want to consume that, they want to engage with that, and they want to share that. And we're going to be able to do a better job of that with this new platform that's being built in. So people will have the opportunity through this new website to go online and customize their preferences for content that they want to receive from us. So we're working through a subscription process right now where they'll be able to put in their information and select what sorts of activities they want to hear about, what locations they are willing to travel to engage in some of these programs. Do they want to hear about runs and hikes going on? Do they want to hear about what's happening in golf in the zoo? Do they want to hear about special events? So we're going to be able to connect with them on a very personal level, delivering them only the content that they want to engage with, which is going to help us hold up our end of the bargain in the relationship that we have with them. And as you'll see here, we know that this is incredibly successful. 75% of customers want brands to personalize information to them. So we've seen what we've done so far, and we're looking at this as a really great opportunity to build on some of what we've already established.
And then finally, just touching on action three, so refining and enhancing our print media. One of the biggest print pieces we do on a monthly basis is our Emerald Necklace newsletter. We've been doing it for 65 years, and right now we have 27,000 households that receive it. And in addition, we distribute another 13,000 throughout our nature centers, our events, and also other community centers like libraries, schools, things of that nature. So we did a robust research study, and I pulled two of the responses from it. We asked folks, we had about 300 folks in the sample that read the newsletter, why do they read it? And from an opening end standpoint, up in the upper right-hand corner, people indicated primarily it was for the event, program, and activity info. So nearly 70% of people. In terms of the frequency of reading each section, when they were asked specifically and listed out the different sections, as you can see, nearly 90% of folks are reading that program and event calendar on a monthly basis. However, when you start to look at the articles and some of the other news and pieces, it dramatically drops off. So you see that cut in half. So one of the things that we're looking to do as we lead towards 2017 is really start to interject again where we see people interacting, and that's on the internet. So what we're looking to do with the Emerald Necklace is scale it back slightly. So every month we're going to continue to produce the event program and event listing, and we're going to do a much better job. We're going to make it more robust and user-friendly, and then quarterly we'll do the full issue of the magazine. And in each of those communications, we'll invite people to visit the new website, let us know some of their interests so we can communicate to them through those channels as well. So just ending on next steps and timing again, all this work's happening now so that as you see a January timeline, we're going to be revamping the whole Emerald Necklace. So the piece that will come out in late December will be revamped. The new website and the preference center and the email newsletters will begin at the first of the year. Any questions?
Yeah, Kelly, what metrics would you use to measure the success of this initiative? I mean, maybe if you go back to slide three, where you had the that was one. So would you use followers, or what would you do, or would you weight these in some way? How would you measure that we're doing a better job?
I think you start with benchmarks, right? So we have so many robust communications tools. So just looking at them, whether it's the social, our website visitation, our engagement on emails, open rates, click throughs, people that are taking actions. The more we know about people that are engaging with us, the more we can look at that funnel. And again, set benchmarks. What type of rates, what type of number of followers and engagement are we looking for, and then measuring those.
Do you think you could give us some objectives? Some metric objectives now before you launch the program?
Sure, and then we can report back on it. We can do a monthly reporting dashboard and share that.
But I think it would be interesting to see what we get out of this in terms of.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you will get a lot of cost savings as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Very good update. Again, I think that the very telling sign is when you look at the internet-based and the fact that how many people are using mobile devices and now multiple mobile devices. When we went from the previous setup on the website to where we were, we didn't necessarily anticipate the fact that it was going to grow so exponentially fast, and the mobile capacity, really the technology wasn't there to make these mobile devices be compatible with the sites to the tune that it is now. And the challenge you have is that right-sizing, you can find the sites pretty quickly that aren't mobile-friendly, but they don't fit inside of your screen. And so we know that a lot of our users are mobile with it, and so we need to adapt to that. We've done the mobile apps, we've done the trail, and we've done a lot of really good things now being able to take. The other thing is that when we had the old website, we migrated thousands of pages of documents to it. The challenge was is that we were getting redundancy in site. When you were Googling Zoo, it was pulling up 1,500 pages worth of data. And so we're working on putting it on a communications diet, or taking that information down and trying to make it faster, more robust, and then starting to tailor make it to the user themselves. But again, using the mobile device platform, I'm amazed at the statistics of where it's come from to where it goes now. The newspapers are at a negative 31% in the internet. So we're really trying to meet our consumers where they're at, and trying to make sure we have the appropriate communication strategy. So I am very, very pleased with that information. I'm looking forward.
One question. Do we have a way to track that someone goes to the website and that leads to an action, like they sign up for
a
program?
That's
right. Okay, so we can keep track of all those things.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. If you think back to how grocery stores have been keeping track of what you do for years with the QVC codes, and you think you're getting a bonus shopper thing, but it's really keeping track of how many times you buy, ground beef to toothpaste to toilet paper. It's keeping track of all that, and then it's sending you coupons relative to that. If you look at Giant Eagle, you look at what comes, it's the products that you end up purchasing, and it's no different than what a lot of them are doing, is building a strategy around what the users are engaging with on the internet.
That's how Delmonico's lost turtle soup.
On that note, that was the last commission briefing and policy item. There is no old business at this point.
Do we have any public comments today? Martin,
good afternoon. Reservation planning meetings in Redstone Hinkley differed from those in the past. Hinkley was more open, allowing questions from the public, which were answered for the benefit of the group. Such a town hall forum is certainly more conducive to an exchange of information and ideas. As you saw, the maps themselves are very complex, hard to take in with all the symbols, needing close examination. Easels and post-its used in past planning meetings revealed shared concerns and focus. Restricting comments this time to a few written lines makes it hard to describe the areas referred to. The public turnout showed how important these legacy parks are to their users. Meanwhile, Rocky River visitors are still waiting for the Fort Hill steps to be finished. Promised for Memorial Day, then pushed to July 4th, then Labor Day. Now looking like trick-or-treat for Halloween. Since this contractor was based on presumed expertise, one has to wonder. Yet the same company is also starting the Cedar Point 4 this week, all the while continuing with the Branksville APT. How long will it take? Seems they have more than they can handle. And blaming delays on the shale? Duh, that's where the whole thing started. The original steps were built in-house with less equipment and engineering on that same shale. Scheduling issues also show up internally. Rocky River Reservation was closed for a foot race, and families who had paid to reserve a picnic area were prevented from getting there. Low-tech, human-powered reservations in the past worked better than the pricey new technology. On the bright side, and emphasizing the human connection, I hear great appreciation for the Little Explorers program, engaging not only the kids, but the adults who accompany them. that is what the park should be and what will create future park supporters. The natural park is a unique venue which does not need to compete with the ever-increasing numbers of events, sites, and entertainment.
Thank you, Marty. We are going to go into an executive session. Kyle, you want to put this on?
Yes, is there a motion to go into executive session to discuss personnel matters, specifically the employment of the position and the additional basis of the acquisition or purchase of real property?
So moved. Second.
We need a roll call, please.
Debbie Berry.
Yes.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
Bruce Rinker.
Yes.
We will not take any action in our executive session. You're welcome to stay if you'd like, but we'll just come back to adjourn the meeting when we are finished. So thank you all very much for your afternoon.
Oh, sorry.